Welcome to Hacks and Jacks. I'm Brett Ford. He's Scott Chu. We're here to talk about hitters on pitcher list. Scott, glad to have you back. Last week I rolled solo. You were under the weather, and we also had Ryan Clark guest star on the top 150 hitters list this week. But I'm glad you're feeling better. Glad you're able to join us this week.
Just a bit of the pneumonia, you know, no big deal. Old enough to get pneumonia now on accident. But yeah, no, big thanks to Ryan. Did a great job with that. Thanks to you. I enjoyed listening to it. I had nothing better to do. I was laying in bed with pneumonia. So really, really glad that folks could step up. But I'm back. I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah, I put the hack in Hacks and Jacks last week. So we're back.
Yeah, usually I gotta carry that banner myself. So I'm glad that I can rely on you, that we can both really step up and bring that to the table.
Yes, sir. Of course. And we've had a great week of baseball. We're in the middle of May somehow. I don't know how that happened, but we're in the middle of May. And let's jump right into the news and notes. The Orioles fired their manager, Brandon Hyde. They're the third team to fire a manager midseason. The Orioles started 15-28. They're turning to interim head coach Tony Mancelino and have immediately gotten swept by the Nats as of today. They've lost six straight. And somehow Mike Elias is still gainfully employed. Their GM. So, Brandon Hyde is out, Tony Mancelino in. I don't know what that changes for the Orioles or if it has any impact other than giving me a soapbox to rant from.
I mean, not much, you know, like losing, you know, when we see this kind of stuff happen and somebody, you know, gets removed, you want to say that it makes a difference, but I'm going to be real with you guys. It just doesn't. Maybe if we see early on, there's a very dramatic. So the thing the manager impacts most, honestly, is stolen bases because they're the ones that can put the sign down. So the Orioles don't, you know, they're not like crazy on the base paths. I don't expect them to become crazy on base paths, but it is possible they steal more bases. But guys, that's really it. That's about all I can tell you in terms of a, yeah, this is the change I expect. This is about it. They might steal more bases, but probably not.
The Los Angeles Dodgers have DFA'd Chris Taylor. Chris Taylor will no longer be on the Dodgers roster. He becomes a free agent. What does that mean for the Dodgers roster construction and especially a talented man by the name of Hyesung Kim?
It's Hyesung Kim, right? So that means he gets to stay on the roster. That's what we were worried about when Edmund came back. It keeps him on the roster, but it does not necessarily give him a clear path to playing time. Because if you were going to take someone's playing time away, you probably wanted to take someone who was like playing a lot, and Chris Taylor wasn't. So, you know, we were pretty sure Hyesung Kim is going to continue to sit against left-handed pitching. We've already seen Miguel Rojas come in and be the second baseman against left-handed pitching. He's right-handed. He's 36, but you know, the Dodgers like him. He puts a lot of balls in play. Edmund doesn't need a platoon mate. He actually played center field today though, which I thought was a little bit interesting. James Outman, they were able to sit him against a lefty. I don't know, you know, James Outman not hitting a ton, but we've seen him be hot in flashes. It, to me, the best way for Hyesung Kim to make it to the everyday starting lineup is you have to see James Outman go away. You see Edmund move to center field, and then you see Hyesung Kim come in as the everyday second baseman. That's the thing you're looking for if you want to maximize sort of the fantasy upside of all these guys, because we don't really care about James Outman's fantasy upside. We care about him as a person because we're humans and we love each other, but we don't really care about his fantasy upside so much. He's not really someone I'm interested in anything, in any mixed league. Got to be NL only then maybe because he's playing, but that's probably where we see Hyesung Kim get his opportunity. It's got to be in that spot.
Yeah, and Kim has been fun to watch so far. A lot of hits, a lot of stolen bases, even popped a home run out of the park the other day. Really exciting bat, and hopefully some increased playing time, a little bit of increased volume for him.
It could be. Again, what we saw today was easy for them to do because they were facing a lefty. It needs to happen against more than just lefties, because that's what it looks like they're going to do to get him playing time. You know, it looks like something they could do to get him playing time full time But for now, it's just something they're doing against lefties to get Rojas and Kike Hernandez in the mix. And we don't care about that for fantasy, right? Again, if you're looking for the fantasy outcomes, it's Edmund staying in center and Kim moving to second base full time, which again, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I give it like 50-50 over the rest of the month to maybe happen. I think what it does do is if you already picked up Kim, you can probably hold on to him in daily leagues. In weekly leagues, it's a little bit rougher. You're going to keep an eye on the schedule. You probably are going to hold him for now because he's been so good when he plays. But yeah, that's the path forward. And at least it is a path, which is different than someone like Jordan Lawler, who I still don't know how that's going to work, right? Like even the A's, when the A's called up Nick Kurtz, we were like, there's no path to playing time. And the A's were like, screw it. We'll do something weird. Tyler Soderstrom, you go out and play outfield. Right? Like, okay, that's weird. And, you know, people, you know, in the AMA and other places have brought up ways for Jordan Lawler to get into the starting lineup. The fact of the matter is he's played twice in the last six games, right? Once against a lefty, once against a righty. It's not even a platoon thing. They don't have anywhere to play him. Right. And I know that it's very easy to say, oh, well, you wouldn't call up a guy to not play him. But it looks like they absolutely would call up Jordan Lawler and not play him. Because what choice do they have? Geraldo Perdomo is hitting really, really well. Ketel Marte is one of the best hitters on their team, right? And the guys who sort of would have given him an opening, you can't do anything about. You can't do anything about Eugenio Suarez. He's got to keep playing. Pavin Smith, he's going to play against every righty because he continues to hit. Even though he's not like, you know, crushing everything as he was earlier in the season. He's doing fairly well now. I think they like Alec Thomas as an outfielder, right? So you can't move Marte back to the outfield or something like that. You know, even Tim Tawa, who at one time was hitting quite well, right? Tim Tawa was a guy that we were thinking about picking up, except Marte was going to be back, so you couldn't do it. They found time for him in the outfield, but like there's just too many mouths to feed in Arizona. So with Hyesung Kim, you see the path, right? They just got to shift some things, and James Altman isn't hitting that well, and the other guys on their bench aren't that good, so you can see that path. I don't see it with Jordan Lawler with this healthy roster, right? Now, injuries happen at any given time. Guys can just, you know, pop positive for steroids or something, right? Something has to happen to create a long-term opening, and then after that opening happens, Jordan Lawler has to hit, right? With Hyesung Kim, we've already seen him do the hitting part when given the opportunity. That's the difference between these two guys. Even though Lawler is a better prospect overall, Kim has the opportunity. Lawler just doesn't. It's why I'd been so hesitant to advocate, you know, picking him up. It's why I'm still hesitant to advocate picking him up. Look, if you want Lawler, you already had to go get him. But this was the huge inherent risk in scooping him. It's that even if they called him up, where would he play? He's got nowhere to play, and I don't see how he gets anywhere to play, especially with how well this offense is doing.
Well, let's pivot and move on to those prospects. Another hyped prospect that is kind of on the outside looking in as far as playing time is with the Dodgers, and that's catcher/outfielder Dalton Rushing, although Dave Roberts might not like me listing him that way.
Yeah, and they haven't put him there, right? And what I just talked about with Kim, how does Kim get in? That they take Altman out and they put Edmund to center field. Like, yeah, sure. You can argue that like Conforto shouldn't be out there, right? He's hit a little bit better lately, but turns out the Dodgers like playing him every single day, right? Cause that's what they're doing. And they're relying on a lot of these veteran bats. I get that it's weird to bring up a prospect and only play him every other day or so with Dalton Rushing, but it's not like you're going to have, I mean, Will Smith is sitting. Like they were willing to sit Will Smith twice. Right. They sat him Thursday and they sat him Saturday so that they could bring in Dalton Rushing. Those guys can't DH because you have Shohei Ohtani DHing. Shohei Ohtani could also play outfield if he really wanted, but they don't. And they probably never will. Look, really, like teams that are hitting really well have crowded rosters that are really hard to get through. The Diamondbacks are like that. The Dodgers are like that. Dalton Rushing is not an everyday catcher. There's not a path to being an everyday catcher. Will Smith's having a great season. Unless something happens to Will Smith, Dalton Rushing is up to be the backup catcher in Dodgerland. And that's just something we have to accept, right? There's not a path. Like Hyesung Kim has a path even if no one gets hurt. Dalton rushing does not have a path to full-time playing time unless something happens to Will Smith. And it won't be a trade. They're not trading him. They want to keep Will Smith. He's their guy. Dalton rushing is up to back him up.
Well, we touched on the two top prospects that made their debuts this week in Lawler and rushing. Let's talk about a couple other guys that may be fantasy relevant in deeper leagues. And that's Chicago Cubs catcher and infielder Moises Ballesteros and Minnesota infielder Ryan Fitzgerald. And then Pittsburgh infielder Spencer Horwitz made his season debut this week as well. Any of those three guys at all interesting to you in 12-team leagues?
In 12-teamers, not really. Maybe Ballesteros. Because if you need a catcher to stream, right? If you've been in that, Ballesteros is a highly regarded prospect and he's getting DH time. In fact, he hasn't even caught yet, right? He's not catching. He appears to be up because they already had good catchers. The Cubs did. And I don't think they planned on messing with that platoon. They're going to use him as a DH most of the time. It looks like maybe not against lefties. Ballesteros is a lefty. They'll probably sit him on those days, but he's going to play against righties. The plate discipline was quite good in the minor leagues. He took another step forward yet again this year after he moved up to AAA and got a little bit more time there. It's a solid spec play if you want to go after a rookie. Usually I avoid rookie catchers unless they're not catching. Then it's a little easier because they're not trying to learn both jobs at the same time. So again, if you've been streaming and you're looking for like a lotto ticket at catcher, Ballesteros could be that. Again, this was a highly regarded prospect, but even then, right, in 12-teamers, there might be better catchers out there.
Quick kind of comparison here. We've had two bat-first catchers / DH / infielders come up in the past month with Ballesteros and then Agustin Ramirez in Miami. Which one would you rather have going forward?
I think I'm going to go Ramirez there. I know how often he's playing, and I think he's locked in for the rest of the year. Ballesteros, he's only DHing, and it's easy to find other guys to DH. So if he doesn't hit right away, he may have some issues. I think long-term, it may be fairly similar, but for short-term, Agustin Ramirez is probably the guy I want. And I'll go one further and say, another catcher who I probably like better right now, who's setting the world on fire. I probably like Drake Baldwin better as well. He seems to have overtaken the most of the time duties over Sean Murphy, who was hot for just a little bit there and less so of late. Murphy's only gotten the start against lefties recently. Baldwin's going against all righties. So that's basically full time for a catcher. I'd rather have Drake Baldwin as well.
Excellent. We'll be right back with some IL updates, and then we'll get into the top 150 hitters list after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. Brett Ford here with Scott Chu to talk about hitters. And Scott, we've got a handful of outfielders going on the IL this week. Chicago Cubs outfielder Ian Happ, Texas Rangers outfielder Evan Carter, Baltimore Orioles outfielder Tyler O'Neill again, and Minnesota Twins outfielder Byron Buxton. Buxton on the concussion IL, so he may be back a little quicker than the other guys. Also going to the concussion IL after a kind of scary collision in short center field, Minnesota infielder Carlos Correa. Which one of those is probably going to impact fantasy managers the most?
The Gray and Buxton one, just of course, like the two guys with the longest injury histories collide into each other. Terrible luck for both of them. We have no real concussions are tough. It's hard to have a real sense. They can come back as soon as 7 days, but often we hear very little. So they're close to being back and they've cleared protocol. So, hopefully you've got a little bit of room for them. I'd probably hold them for at least a couple days if you can, until you have a lot of pressure for those bench spots. If you're not able to get them on your IL, both of them have shown enough that I'd at least be interested, especially shortstop, which can be tough to fill on your wire. Depends on what's out there. He had started to show a few signs of life here and there. Carlos Correa, Buxton, he'd been hitting well. Plenty of outfielders out there, though, so it's hard to say. I think the ones that are going to the one that impacts you the most is Ian Happ. So Happ playing really well for the Cubs, and he leads off. So he was this great this great source of runs scored, which is something that's hard to get off the wire because you generally need guys that are in good offenses hitting near the top, and those guys tend not to be on wires all that often. So it's an oblique injury for Hap. I'm not sure we have a true sense of when he might be back. Hopefully it's closer to a minimum stay. That's sort of the feeling I've gotten so far. We've loved the lower strikeout rate. The power hasn't been there for Hap. The interesting thing that does come out of this injury from Hap, though, is that it's moved Pete Crow Armstrong to the leadoff spot in Chicago, which obviously is great for his stolen bases. It's great for his runs scored. Dude has been setting the world on fire, Pete Crow Armstrong. And I keep getting asked if what he's doing is sustainable. Sustainable in big air quotes. Because, like, can Pete Crow Armstrong continue being a top three overall fantasy producer? No. Going to go out on a limb. I'm going to go ahead and say no. He's still fairly aggressive. He chases quite a bit. He hits a lot of things in the air. I think the batting average for Pete Crow Armstrong is going to come down eventually. It's just hard to run that kind of three, even just a 320 BABIP, when you just simply put that many balls in the air. And while he is hitting the ball harder, it's not like he's scorching the thing all the time, right? It's a slightly above average barrel rate, but not, you know, not so much so that I'm like, oh yeah, he's definitely going to keep doing this. So I would expect the batting average to come down to be something closer to like 250 over the long term. I think he's going to keep running, that's for sure. And I think this season we might even see Pete Crow Armstrong be something like a 30 home run, 40 stolen base guy, which represents obviously his ceiling from my perspective. And I think in future years, it's probably something more like 20 to 25 home runs and like 30 to 35 stolen bases. But that's a heck of a player. And if I had told you coming into the season that 20 home runs and 30 stolen bases is basically in the bag, assuming he stays healthy, you would have been thrilled to get Pete Crow Armstrong where you were going. So don't take that as a knock on Pete Crow Armstrong. I'm just saying, I know he's only 23, but this feels a lot more like ceiling than norm, which is fine, right? Like, this is what the hot streak looks like. I want to see what the next slump looks like and how long it lasts. We saw slumps last year, and they took forever for Pete Crow Armstrong to dig himself out of. So if he starts bouncing out of those really quick, we can start talking about how close to his ceiling can he get from year to year.
Well, I think the thing that I like most about PCA's just profile this year is the significant increase in zone contact. He's gone up from, I mean, granted, limited sample, first kind of big taste of the major leagues. He was down at 75.8% last year. He's all the way up to 85% this year. So I think that's made a big difference. And of course, you know, all the other stats have improved with that. But I think that's kind of what's been making the most difference, is actually hitting pitches in the zone now.
Oh, yeah, that's really what it is, because he already chases quite a bit. So Pete Crow Armstrong is very willing to go out of the zone, which is fine, but it means that when you do swing at stuff in the zone, you got to hit it, right? Cause you're going to miss a lot of that stuff out of the zone. So you got to hit the stuff you get in the zone, and that's what he's doing, right? He's just hitting a lot more pitches in the zone. That's what tells me that this is more than just a regular hot streak. There's a true skill change behind it. It comes with that contact in general, and especially contact in the zone. That's what tells me that, again, there's more to this than, like, there's definitely way more than we saw last year. This isn't just like an unbelievable hot streak, and then he comes all the way back down to what we saw in 2024. He's showing us things that are significantly better than what we saw last season that point to sustainability, right? Zone contact is one of those things that when you have a lot of zone contact, it's a lot easier to be consistent. Because again, you're hitting the pitches that pitchers don't give you a lot of stuff that's great to hit in the zone. So you got to hit it when you get it. He's able to do that. That's, to me, the sign of sort of a next level of Pete Crow Armstrong beyond just the insane results, right? Results, Kyren Paris had results, right? Pete Crow Armstrong has results, and it's longer. And a lot of that comes from the skill changes that happen, and not just like anyone can get crazy hot for a week or two. He's done this for an extended time, and a lot of that comes with the improved contact ability.
Well, fantasy managers will be hoping he stays in the leadoff spot when Hap comes back here in the next couple of weeks.
He won't. And I'm only going to tell you why. And it's not because Pete Crow Armstrong isn't good enough. It's because Ian Hap, I think, is just a much more tailored. First of all, if they had wanted Pete Crow Armstrong in the leadoff spot over Hap, they would have done it already, right? It's not like he just started hitting. He's been hitting all year. Thing is, Hap walks. Pete Crow Armstrong simply does not. right? So I think what they're going to do is they're going to keep Pete Crow Armstrong batting somewhere like third, fourth, somewhere in there. We might see a guy like, say, a Suzuki drop a little bit, or he's going to stay in the heart of the order, which is fine, right? Because all you're really trading there is runs for RBI. He's still going to get to run, especially because the guys behind him aren't going to be quite so good. So you might as well let him run to advance bases, because you might not get the hits. So he's not going to stay there. But in the short term, really enjoy the extra run scored. Pete Crow Armstrong isn't exactly built to be a leadoff guy. Yes, he's got the speed, but his on base is going to be pretty up and down because he just doesn't walk.
We'll move on to a bat down in Tampa Bay who's coming back from an extended IL stay, and that's outfielder Josh Lowe. Lowe returning from an oblique injury sustained in spring training this year, and kind of recreating another logjam in the Tampa Bay outfield.
Because there's always a logjam in this outfield. They just have a lot of guys. They have a lot of lefties, a lot of lefties. They like the platoon. So I think Josh Lowe is in a platoon. I think, you know, he's played every day, obviously, so far, because it's only been righties. But I think as we see lefties, we're in a platoon. And here's the thing. Lowe has power, some, you know, in a full season for him, which is going to be mostly platoon, he could hit like 20 home runs. And we've seen him steal 30 bases, right? That's like the ceiling. And that's obviously a very good player. But what you actually have with Lowe, generally speaking, is a fairly streaky outfielder who is going to sit against left-handed pitching most of the time because this team just wants to get all their guys in. And yeah, I get it, right? Like the StatCast stuff is showing us to be really good. But like last year, we saw what I think is closer to the real version of Lowe. Not in that it's bad results necessarily. Like we might see him be better on the ratios by cutting that strikeout rate down just a little bit. But what you saw was a guy who's going to give you up and down performance. Heck, even in that breakout, that 2023 breakout, we had the 20 home runs and 32 stolen bases, which you might not remember, is he was terrible all summer. He was like, he came out, he went gangbusters, and then he was terrible for like 2-3 months, just like basically unrosterable. And then he was good again. And we've just seen this from him over and over, where he has these long lulls and then he spikes up and then he has these long lulls. And that's really hard to roster, even though at the end of the day, the stats can look pretty good, right? Especially if he fixes the strikeout rate and the ratios get a little better, right? It was still 10 home runs and 25 stolen bases in 106 games, right? Like that's not bad. That's not that far off from a 20-30 pace, right? The problem is it's going to come really inconsistent. And what it's going to remind you a lot of, like right now, we've seen this in a microcosm of sorts, not with the speed, but Taylor Ward. So Taylor Ward has been really, really good for like 8 days at a time. He hit like 6 home runs in 9 games earlier this season. And now he has like 5 home runs in like a week, right? And then in between those times, it's just not good. It's like not rosterable good, right? Droppable. It's very, very bad. And I don't expect Lowe to be that extreme, but that's the type of player we're talking about here. And that's just really hard to roster in weekly leagues because you feel it really hard. Now in Roto, you can try to just set and forget and know that it'll all come out in the wash. Doesn't work that way in head to head. And I wouldn't be shocked if Lowe is sitting on your bench on some of his best days, right? That like Wilmer Flores just went off for like 3 home runs, 8 RBI. He'd been terrible for like 2.5-3 weeks prior to that. Like, probably cut in most leagues. Now he's hit these home runs. Everyone's going to scoop him back. And guess what? Why? Right? Why? The 3 home runs and 8 RBI are already gone. You don't get him when you pick him up, right? He's not going to do that again. Right now, Eugenio Suarez has continued to hit for power and be good. And that's great. But again, it's the nature of some of these streaky power hitters with Lowe, he's weird because he's like a streaky speed guy, but these streaky hitters, the mental toll that comes with it is something to think about in these weekly head-to-head leagues. I just say it because I talk to enough people about managing their teams. These players are hard to roster, even when you know it's going to come out in the wash at the end. So just keep that in mind as you're going through this. They're really nice players to try and trade because when they're hot, it's not luck, right? The StatCast sliders are all red. Everything's beautiful because when they're hot, it's true heat, right? It's not like, oh, it's just BABIP driven luck. These guys are actually good. They're just only in it for short times. And then they go through adjustment periods and then it comes back. But I think you, if you're the type of person who doesn't want to be constantly worrying about whether you should start the guy today or not, they're good players to try to trade for someone who's a little bit more stable.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more Hacks and Jacks after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm Brett Ford. He's Scott Chu. Every week, Scott puts together the top 150 hitters list on Pitchers List. And unfortunately, this week, Scott was sick, so we had our friend Ryan Clark fill in for us. Ryan did a great job. And we're going to talk about some of the changes to the list this week. Scott, you agree with most of what Ryan did this week?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's some guys that, you know, like he moved a little more than maybe I would have. But that's the thing. It was his list for a week, right? So a lot of it is usually like within tier. And the thing I'll tell you is within a tier, I'm not going to argue with someone too much, right? Like if you want the guy, you know, if you want a guy in this tier, you want to move him up. I think the one thing that now that I've been looking at him so much this weekend, Pete Crow Armstrong, I probably would have bumped up a little bit more because I'm getting a better feel for the floor. But, you know, again, it's sort of splitting hairs because like if you're an elite, you know, Pete Crow Armstrong has obviously been amazing, but like, I'm not sure I'm ready to trade him straight up for Wyatt Langford. Like if I have Wyatt Langford, would I trade Wyatt Langford for Pete Crow Armstrong? If I have Ketel Marte, would I trade it for Pete Crow Armstrong? I'm sure there's some people out there going, oh yeah, absolutely. But like that comes with a fair bit of risk because we've never seen Pete Crow Armstrong do this at all, much less for a full season. Whereas we have seen that. We've seen it for an extended time with Wyatt Langford. We've seen it multiple times with Ketel Marte. I think it's a lot more challenging than it sounds. It's easy to say that for the guy who's hitting right now, but in a month that could all change. So that's probably one guy I probably would have moved up a little bit more. And I think I'm ready to drop Brian Reynolds. Ryan didn't do that. It's going to happen though. Like, so in the next list, you'll see Brian Reynolds take quite a fall because I know things are going to turn around for him, but I don't think you necessarily need to wait for it in some of the shallower leagues. And finally, the one true bone I have to pick is he rearranged my first baseman in tier 7, which are Soderstrom, Torkelson, and Rice. We'll talk about it more later, I'm sure. But he rearranged them, and that offended me deeply, Ryan. I mean, it didn't, and I understand why you did it, but it's going back.
All right, let's dive in. Let's dive into some of these changes real quick. We'll start with the biggest risers of the week, and we'll jump straight into tier 3 at 19, up 11 spots this week, is San Diego Padres outfielder Jackson Merrill. And obviously, just an absolute stud. What do we think?
That it was a great use of a rolling chart in the article. I recommend you check it out if you haven't already. But basically, the rolling chart has showed us it's only been a couple, you know, by this point, it only been a couple games, about a week since he'd been back, picked up right where he left off. Jackson Merrill doesn't show well on our decision-making metrics because he swings a bit more because he's really good at making contact. And basically, if you're really good at making contact, you don't need to make great decisions according to our model because you can hit stuff that are, you know, league average decision model tree is going to say, it's like, oh, that's, you probably shouldn't swing at that. That's hard to hit unless you're like Jackson Merrill and then you will hit it. So you might as well swing at it. It's a good decision for him, just not for our model. So he picked up exactly where he left off, technically a little bit better than that. So yeah, I totally get it. I was slow to buy in on Jackson Merrill. I'm still not 100% sure where I expect the home run numbers to end up, but the fact of the matter is the hit tool is even better than we thought it was, and we already thought it was very, very good. So with that kind of hit tool, the consistency is going to be through the roof, and we're going to see Jackson Merrill just be I think very, very solid for quite a while.
Well, we'll pivot to second base where Detroit Tigers second baseman Gleyber Torres has risen 13 spots. He's up to number 74, all the way up to tier 8. You know, right behind guys like Bryce Terang, Christian Campbell, right in that glob of second baseman, middle infielders there in the 70s. Torres carrying your Tigers right now. How are we feeling about that?
Well, I mean, lots of guys carrying the Tigers. They were the first team to get to 30 wins. It's been a lot of fun. Two big things about Gleyber Torres going on right now. Number one, The plate discipline is outstanding, right? About as many walks as strikeouts. The last time we saw anything close to that was 2023, which was really his best season besides rabbit ball year, when he torched the Orioles for about a million home runs in a single season. But here's the thing. It's two parts, right? Number one, he's playing for a good offense. We didn't actually think the Tigers offense would be nearly this good, but they've been an outstanding offense so far. And batting, you know, somewhere between first and third for them every single day is a really good way to pile up runs and even RBI, right? So that's been a big part of it. The ratios look real, real good, in part just, again, because of the outstanding plate discipline. There's nothing luck about it. So, hey, you keep hitting like this on the top of a really good lineup, you're going to move up the ranks.
We'll jump down to tier number 9. Jonathan Aranda, first baseman from the Tampa Bay Rays, has almost caught his platoon mate there in Yandy Diaz. Yandy Diaz ranked 88th. Obviously, first baseman for the Rays. Jonathan Aranda, 91st. He's up 20 spots this week. What have we seen out of Aranda, and how does he compare to some of the other first base breakouts that you mentioned previously?
Well, so the one thing he doesn't have going for him is full-time playing time. I know he played all week because the Rays faced all righties for the last week, actually a little over a week. It's been all righties. What we have seen is he seems to be stopping. Like, what we haven't seen from Aranda is this like prolonged slump. We've seen him be like kind of average for a little bit, but he hasn't gone on these prolonged slumps. That's going to be really key for him. The strikeout rate is up a little bit right now. I'd like to see that come back down, but he does get hits in bunches. You know, obviously not a great game today and a couple more strikeouts. So it was an aggressive move up, and I'm kind of interested to see how that plays out, but we're also seeing consistent hard hit balls. Over and over, he continues to hit the ball. I mean, 94.3 average exit velocity. And it's not like that's all front loaded, right? That he's just showing that kind of power every single week. So, you know, we kind of liked him as a sleeper in the offseason. Obviously, we like him a little more than that now. Still a platoon. So he's behind, to me, the guys like Torque and Soderstrom and Ben Rice, who gets play every day. But when he does play, he hits fourth or fifth. The Rays offense isn't great, but, you know, it's still hitting in the heart of a lineup that can score some runs. And, you know, again, it's really nice to see a young player kind of breaking out. And at least he's on the big side of platoon, right? He's left-handed. He'll get to play against all the righties. He's a step below, but there's still a lot of upside here. And I think by the end of, you know, he's showing some of that power he showed us last season too, but this time with a better walk rate, better, you know, better ratio simply because of the way he's hitting the ball and with all of that power and turning some of those grounders into line drives and that kind of thing. So it's really nice to see. I think we're going to see a guy who by the end of the season gets close to about 20 home runs with good ratios, which doesn't sound like much, but hey, I mean, that's a player that you can just keep on the roster all year long.
And for those playing at home, we did hit our one Spencer Torkelson mention with Scott back on the podcast. So make sure you tally that. Scott, let them know. Get torqued, nerds.
Get torqued, nerds. Almost had a home run today. Went off the top of the wall at the Rogers Center, the tallest part of the wall, because he's got real power, and you all should be deeply respecting Spencer Torkelson, who you could, I'm pretty sure, get like, it picked like 6 million. It was closer to like 200 something, but I've got him everywhere and you should all just be very, very happy. He gets better at all the stuff he's good at. And like the strikeout rate's coming down. Right. So, you know, how can you not be excited about Torque, who is well on his way, it appears, to a 30 home run season. Even if the batting average isn't good, the OBP is a lot better and he's going to keep hitting home runs. Now, why is the batting average down? Because he hits a bunch of fly balls, right? So that's the thing that you have to kind of point out with Torque is like the batting average, just because he hits the ball hard doesn't necessarily mean the batting average is going to get better. And that's because he hits a bunch of fly balls. And as you've heard me say on this podcast many times, every fly ball that doesn't leave the yard is basically an out. So that's going to keep happening over half the time with Torque. But as long as he keeps that home run fly ball rate above about 15%, that's what he did back in 2023. It's at 19% now. that's how we see Torque be a 30 home run guy with a batting average that doesn't kill you, and maybe even an OBP that is helpful. That would be the biggest change from his 2023.
Well, speaking of guys that have massive power potential, we move on to our biggest riser of the week. That's down in tier 10, ranked 103 this week, up 27 spots. Texas Rangers third baseman Josh Jung.
Yeah, hit a bunch of home runs for a guy who, you know, we kind of hoped would start hitting a bunch of home runs. He had fallen quite a bit because he just wasn't showing any kind of consistency there. And then he really turned it on. We've seen Josh Jung be really one of the best hitters in baseball over the last week or two. So it's exciting to see. The other thing that's really, really big for Josh Jung, almost even more than the power, because we already knew he had the power, what we've seen is a drop in that strikeout rate. And we've actually been seeing that for a little while, right? So if you go back even about a month, you see a strikeout rate that is much, much better than we expected, just 17.6% over his last 102 plate appearances coming into today. So it's even slightly, it's probably still about that. He had one strikeout today. Streaky power hitter, to be sure. But the highs and lows of that are going to be so much more manageable if he keeps that strike. I mean, a strikeout rate around 20% is going to make him much, much, much more dependable than, you know, what we would have expected from a guy like him who's striking out close to 30%, which is what we've seen in the past. So that change in the strikeout rate is a really big deal. It's okay that the exit velocity numbers aren't super eye popping, right? The hard hit rate doesn't absolutely, doesn't blow your mind, because it doesn't need to. He only needs to hit it hard enough to leave the yard. He doesn't need to hit it a million miles an hour. The zone contact is up. He's swinging less, which is probably good for him. The overall contact numbers are way, way up because he's gotten a little better at making contact with stuff out of the zone that he swings at. He doesn't chase a ton, but just by making contact, you don't want him necessarily put those balls out of the zone in play, but fighting them off, especially in two strike counts, is really valuable. So those kinds of changes are really improving that strikeout rate. And with that improved strikeout rate, that's how we see Josh Jung take the next step.
We'll be back after this break. We'll talk about some of the guys who are tumbling down on the hitters list after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. Brett Ford here with Scott Chu. We're digging in to the top 150 hitters list this week, and we're on to our fallers. Biggest drops this week in rankings, and we go to tier 7. He's down 11 spots from last week, ranked 61st overall. And it's kind of funny because he's right next to another faller at the same position at 60th overall, who's down 9 spots. So that's Ozzie Albies and Jose Altuve. Both down a tier this week on the list. Scott, what's going on with these second basemen?
I wish I could tell you. So Ozzie Albies is tough because he's never been a guy to light up the Statcast page, right? If you're into the sliders, I don't love the sliders because I find them very redundant. Like, they tell you a lot of the same information. Basically, if a guy is hitting barrels, then all the sliders are red. And if he's not, they're not. But Albies has never been a big barrels guy. He's never been a big exit velocity guy, and he's still got the job done, right? So with Ozzie Albies, you know, you look at his big seasons, and he never had much, you know, he never had a hard hit rate above 40% for a full season, barrel rate never in the double digits, but he still got it done. That's just not happening anymore. And I've been asked why a couple times now, like, oh, why isn't Albies doing well? What, you know, what is it that we're clinging to for Albies? And unfortunately, it's really just track record, right? So Ozzie Albies has a great track record, both in 2021 and 2023, and not so good in 2022 or 2024. And this season looks actually worse than both of those by a fair margin so far. So the plate discipline's fine, and the stolen bases are fine. And even the home run numbers could eventually get good, but that's because the projection systems think that he's closer to 2023 than 2024. And I'm not convinced. So Albies has tumbled once already. He tumbled again. He may even tumble again if we don't see that power, because without that power, there's just nothing really there. He's been sliding down the lineup. He's been batting mostly sixth and seventh lately. The dream for Albies is to be making more contact, batting first for a team that kind of was dying for a leadoff hitter and just couldn't get one, but he can't do it. And the only reason that Albies isn't just straight droppable in 10, 12 team leagues is because there's not a ton of high ceiling players at second base. There just aren't. So you're kind of stuck with Albies because he's shown us that he can hit 30 bombs in a season. And even if you look at his early career, 25 home runs, 15 stolen bases, we're dying for that, right? We'd love that. We're not anywhere close to it right now. He's more on pace for like 15. He stays healthy all year, and staying healthy has not been something he's been terribly good at the last several years. So I'm not saying you should drop him yet. I am saying I'm probably looking for another second baseman to start right now because he's just not doing it. Now, with Jose Altuve, I don't think it's quite as dire because at least Altuve is, it doesn't feel as dire. He's still batting second, even though he's not hitting very well right now. The plate discipline is fine, and Altuve was never, again, not a guy who ever lit up the Statcast pages, even in his best seasons. The numbers are down just a little bit. I trust Altuve a little more because he's gotten it done the last several years, right? Not just like every other year, but he's actually been a good hitter in 2021, 2022, 2023, and 2024. So this could just be a normal slump. Now it's kind of like a slump we saw from him last year, right? It's been a little bit longer, but it's similar to a slump we saw from Ozzy Albies about a year ago. So there's a chance he just kind of gets out of it, gets in his funk. And again, I just have a little more, it's really sort of that touchy-feely sort of trust factor with Jose Altuve, who's found ways to get it done in consecutive seasons, which we haven't seen from Albies. Neither one is droppable. Both of them are frustrating. I just have more faith that Altuve turns it around. I'm not trading for either one of them. And I'll be frank with you, you probably can't trade away either one. I know people want to say like, oh, I want to trade him while he still has name value. I have never had success doing that. Because the moment I offer someone in a trade, they look at their current season stats and they say, this guy sucks, right? And it's easy to talk yourself out of Jose Altuve. He is 35 years old. Barely, but he's still 35 years old. He's hitting poorly on an offense that is underperforming, right? That lost Kyle Tucker, that still doesn't have Yordan Alvarez, and we're still not sure when he'll be back. He's still having hand pain. So, like, who's the best hitter in this offense for the Astros? Who are you really afraid of? For years, it's been, wow, the Astros have a scary lineup. Honest to God, the two best hitters in the Astros lineup right now are Jeremy Pena and Isak Paredes, who I like. I like both of them. But neither of them are scary. No, like, you know, pitching coaches don't go to bed at night being like, what am I going to do about Jeremy Pena and Isak Paredes? They're saying, well, we'll pitch to him and we'll see how it goes, right? Because the other seven guys are worse than that. So, I don't think you can trade either one away. I'm not trying to trade for either one because I think I'll have to pay him more than I would like to. So, it's this horrible situation where you're just stuck. And I know some of you are in spots where you're like, man, I'm about to be 3-4 in my weekly league. I've got to make a move. This guy's burning a hole in my second base spot. And all I can tell you is like, I'm sorry. That really sucks, but you're probably stuck with these guys right now. Your wire probably doesn't have a ton of options. I really like, maybe it does, right? You're well, please message me on Twitter at If The Chew Fits, hit me up on Blue Sky, ScottChew.com. Pitcherlist.com, hit me up anywhere, in comments on Pitcherlist, wherever you can. And we can talk about the guys on your wire and whether it makes sense to try to scoop one of them for one of your other bench bats and give you a guy to start short term. But second base is tough, man. There's just not a lot of high ceiling guys, certainly not guys with the ceilings of Altuve and Albies. So unfortunately, yes, I think you're a little bit stuck.
Yeah. At least until Travis Bezanna comes up, right?
One day. But even then, right? Is he going to play full time? He probably should because the Guardians just don't have many good hitters and his path's a little clearer. But still, right? If you're saying I want to drop Jose Altuve or Ozzy Albies for Hyesung Kim, I'm going to tell you no, right? Even though it feels right, I'm going to tell you no, and I'm going to ask who else you can cut to scoop Kim to play while you're benching the other two.
Well, that's fair. We'll stay at second base with our next faller, and that's Cincinnati Reds second baseman Matt McClain. And really, the Reds, I don't think they had a single hitter move up this week. I'm pretty sure every single Cincinnati Reds bat fell in the rankings or stayed stagnant. I think Ellie De La Cruz stayed the same, and everybody else who's featured in the list fell, because we're going to touch on another Cincinnati Red here in a few minutes. But Matt McClain, 85th, down 11 spots. He's down in tier 9. And what are we doing with the young second baseman?
So we've seen some flashes, right? Hit some home runs this, end of last week, one more this week. That's cool. The strikeout rate is still really ugly. And that just worries the crap out of me. Another thing happened that I, you know, even though, like, by the numbers, he stole a bunch of bases last week. And so that makes him look pretty good for fantasy in the short term. He just got bumped down in the lineup. So Matt McClain for the last five games has batted 7th, 8th, or 9th in a lineup that's not that good. The Reds offense is just, it's going to be very streaky. They don't have a lot of guys who are just going to be consistent contributors all the time, except for maybe Ellie De La Cruz, because he's going to lead off. He's going to steal bases whenever he can. But outside of him, man, this offense is scary in terms of just not having a ton of rocks in it that you can really rely on. And I'm still just so worried about this strikeout rate from Matt McClain. It's going to make him just extremely streaky. He struck out 3 more times today. He went 0 for 3 with 3 strikeouts. It's, again, when he makes contact, that goes pretty well, right? His barrel rate's good. Hard hit rate's good. But because he swings and misses just so much, and his, you know, his zone contact is fine. He doesn't chase a lot, but the dude just strikes out a ton. Even with all this contact, it drives me nuts. Not a guy I'm going to tell you to drop, right? He's been good enough that you don't need to drop him. He's actually number 11, the 11th best second baseman on the year, mostly thanks to these 10 stolen bases he's already got in 40 or 39 games. But it's going to be a bumpy ride, folks. And a lot of that power we saw in his debut season, two things happened in his debut in 2023 that I was a little worried about. Number one, he had all these extra line drives. So he's at 24.2% line drive rate for quite a while. It was actually up at 30%. And that was driving this batting average that you saw, right? So he hit 290 his rookie season. And that is largely driven by this super high line drive rate. That's why he had this BABIP of like 385. That he just didn't have in the minors usually, right? He did in AAA in 2023, but again, it was a bunch of line drives. And so I wasn't a big believer in that. And I knew that he was going to hit a bunch more fly balls because his minor league track record told us that he's going to hit a lot of fly balls. And guess what? Matt McClain is hitting 47.7% fly balls. That's a lot closer to what he was doing in the minors. And what did I say about Torque? Why does Torque hit 238? Because he hits a bunch of fly balls. And if they don't leave the yard, they're out. Now, it's nice playing in Great American Ballpark because it's little and a lot of those fly balls will leave the yard, but not like all of them, right? The ones that don't leave are outs. So now that line drive rate is down to 18.2%. And line drive rate is the flukiest of all of the batted ball stats, right? Line drives, it's just really fluky. It always will be. There are very few players that sustain line drive rates above like 22, 23%. Most of them are guys like Luis Arraez. Jacob Wilson's probably going to do that. Freddie Freeman, these sort of slap line drive hitting types. That was never Matt McClain. It's a lot of fly balls. I think the batting average is going to suffer, especially with that kind of strikeout rate. I don't think it'll stay at 187, but 230? Yeah, I mean, that sounds about right to me. Maybe 240 if he really turns it around. I think some of the projections are a little too rosy on the batting average. I assume they think the line drive rate's going to rebound. I don't. So with Matt McClain, I think at the end of the day, you'll get this guy who like hits 20 home runs and steals 25 bases or so with bad batting average, an okay OBP, but think just like he's better than Zach Gieloff, but that's kind of what I think you're looking at here, right? A good version of Zach Gieloff, which is still a bit of a painful guy to roster, especially in batting average leagues, but you'll get the numbers. It's just going to be, it's going to be a journey, right? There's going to be some deep slumps because of his high fly ball approach and the high strikeouts. Unless that strikeout rate really comes down, to below 30%. This is just going to be a bumpy ride for Matt McLean.
Well, we move on to a guy who I actually talked about last week tumbling. He's tumbling again this week to the point where he might be below replacement level where fantasy managers should think about dropping him. Down at number 100 this week, down 14 spots, tier 10. That's Houston Astros first baseman Christian Walker. Scott, are we dropping Christian Walker?
I think that there are plenty of people who can do that, because while he's in the top one, well, he's at the cusp of the top 100. There's a lot of first basemen that are in that range, right? I'll quickly go through them. Vlad Guerrero, Pete Alonso, Freddie Freeman, Bryce Harper, Matt Olson, Josh Naylor. Technically Sal Perez, but don't even count Sal Perez. We'll skip him. We'll go to Cody Bellinger, Tyler Soderstrom, Spencer Torkelson, Ben Rice, Paul Goldschmidt, Isak Paredes, Luis Arraez, Yandy Diaz, Kyle Manzardo, Jonathan Aranda. A bunch of them you scooped on the wire. Christian Walker can probably be dropped. Because yeah, I assume you have one of those other guys.
I mean, you rattled off 16 names, and I'm pretty sure I feel more comfortable with any of them in my starting lineup right now than I feel about Christian Walker.
Even if you're like, oh, I don't think I like Yandy Diaz, right? And Isak Paredes isn't eligible at first base in my league. What about the other 14? Like, you probably have one that you got for free, right? You got them for free. So, yeah, you can probably let him go. First base went from a position that we were like, ah, you better make sure you get one early, to there's a bunch more. Because you know who else is in that tier with Christian Walker? Four more first basemen. Rhys Hoskins, Nathaniel Lowe, Vinny Pasquantino, and Spencer Steer. And if you're stashing in the next tier, Nick Kurtz is there. There's just a ton of first basemen. Oh, and hey, maybe you went and scooped Jake Berger when he came back, because he's probably going to be ranked higher than that. There's so many first basemen now. You just don't need to wait and see with Christian Walker in a 10 or a 12 team league, especially if you don't have a corner infield spot. And especially if you grabbed one of these other guys.
Berger finally, I won't go through the Berger puns again. We've done it once. That's enough. But glad to see him back in the major leagues for the Texas Rangers.
Because what was the point of that? Streaky power hitter was on a cold streak. What he had nothing to look with. You could send it like he's a grown man playing with these AAA kids, right? He's bald for God's sake, right? Like he has nothing to learn down there. Bald guys who nothing against bald guys. Bald is beautiful, folks, but he had no business being down there. There was nothing for him to learn down there. He was just cold. He's been cold many times. This was not different than what we've seen in the past. So sent him down. They brought him up. They're like, oh yeah, we did something right. No, you just waited out a cold streak, brought him back, and now he's not anymore. This was going to happen no matter what you did, because it's the nature of his game. Just a streaky power hitter, man.
Well, speaking of streaky power hitters, we've got one who has been struggling since returning from the IL. He's down 26 spots, our biggest faller of the week at number 145. That's Cincinnati Reds catcher Tyler Stevenson. And, I mean, with all the catchers that we talked about earlier this episode, Stevenson's got to be a drop, right?
Well, he's not playing full time now, right? So he used to get those DH at bats, but he did not get them at all over the last week. And that's very alarming to me. That was supposed to be the thing that kept his floor high. If he's not going to get those DH at bats, yes, you can absolutely drop him. He's no different than any of the other guys. You can stream him at home.
Yeah, with the playing time differences, it sounds like Drake Baldwin might be moving ahead of a guy like Tyler Stevenson in next week's edition of the list.
Well, I mean, I won't have to worry about exact rank because Tyler Stevenson's unlikely to be on the next list. I think Ryan was right to move him down to the bottom. This is what I do with guys who are on their way out, is they move down to the bottom. I give them one more week and then they go. Tyler Stevenson's probably going to go. Maybe not. Maybe he shows us something next week and gets some DH at bats in the next, 3 days, but I don't think it's likely.
Well, when they exit the list, they head to the taxi squad. And let's talk about the taxi squad a little bit. Is there anybody that you would like to highlight this week that's mentioned in the taxi squad, or that somebody that you think may ascend to the list in coming weeks?
It's actually more the other way. I want to talk, this is less to like call out specific players about like, oh, the specific thing that happened. And it's more about the flavors of the week that we run into a lot. We've already had so many. It's mid-May. We've already had so many. I'm just going to say names that you should have dropped already, but maybe you didn't because they were so good for you for those 2 weeks. You need to change your mind. One of them being Eric Wagemann. Remember Eric Wagemann? He's still out there. He's still playing every day. He's still a fine contact hitting guy. He just doesn't need to be on your fantasy team for more than the short times that he's hot, right? I think a guy I'd call out going the other way, someone who might be a little interesting to you, for good news, Brooks Lee. So that's because he's batting fourth in Carlos Correa's absence. And you might get some RBI there, right? This team is red hot. They finally lost, right? The AL Central is just an absolute, I mean, it's a dogfight up there. But they finally lost, but there's a lot to get from Brooks Lee if he continues batting fourth for a hot offense. I don't know how long it'll last, but while it does, if you need a second or third baseman, which let's be real, most of you probably do, that's worth a look. But again, other guys who were, you know, that short-term flavor, right? Like Cam Smith, he's droppable in every redraft league. He doesn't play all the time. It's a challenge, right? So you got to just let him, you got to let him go. And I get it. It's hard because he should, you know, it was a good opportunity. He should have been the guy, but like spring training ain't reality. And this is not to pat myself on the back because I always kept him low in the ranks because he very well could have proven me wrong. And he is getting playing time more so. But like even with these ups and downs we're seeing from Cam Smith, what I would recommend that you do is not focus on them too hard, right? Because if you're in a 10 or a 12 team league and you need an outfielder, there are too many I listed all those first basemen. You don't even want to see what the list looks like for outfield, right? Like, at the end of the day, this dude sits 2-3 times a week. And that's just not, unless a dude is like, you can start guys who sit 2 or 3 times a week because lefties show up or something and they're Kerry Carpenter. You can do that. But in redraft, you can't do that with a guy like Cam Smith, who's not in any sort of predictable platoon and who isn't showing nearly the kind of power that we hoped and who may figure it out at any time, but may need quite a while to figure it out because it turns out going from AA to the majors is really hard. So just keep an eye, you know, don't be too attached to these guys, right, in general. One more that I will mention, he didn't play today. I am very interested in Ezekiel Tovar, who just came off the IL. So he was in the IL stashes section, but I'm very interested in Ezekiel Tovar because he was doing all the right things prior to hitting the IL. I'm really excited to see what he can do coming back. Again, I have absolutely no faith in the Colorado organization. There's a great article. I think it was on The Athletic talking about how these guys don't have their own advanced scoutings, right? They don't have what we do with PLV is more than the Rockies do in their organization. And I love Kyle, and Kyle could absolutely work for any major league team, but like we pay one dude and we have a better internal like stuff plus metric than the Rockies because they don't have one, right? Like they don't. So I don't love the fact that players are not really going to improve in Colorado because of the coaching, but some of them may improve in spite of the coaching. And so Ezekiel Tovar, second base has been rough, a guy to keep an eye on. I think I like his upside a little bit more than Brooks Lee, but if you're just looking for a plug-in at second base and want some RBI, go ahead and get Brooks Lee. Although I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Rockies are at home quite a bit in the upcoming schedule. So Tovar gets the edge in that sense.
Well, excellent, excellent. A lot of guys on that taxi squad and a lot of guys at IL stashes. Hopefully we can see them back on the field sooner than later. Any parting words of wisdom for fantasy managers before we wrap up tonight?
So if you are in the middle of the pack in your leagues right now, it is not the end of the world and it is not time to panic. Because here's the thing. It's still very early in the season. Now, if you're in very last, that's a problem. And it's going to be hard to get all the way back up to, let's say, first in a roto. But if you're in a head-to-head league, especially, and you're in that middle of the pack, maybe even like the, you know, you're in seventh or eighth even, there is still time. Don't panic necessarily. Just try to keep a level head and keep doing the right things. It's going to be okay. Right. But also keep in mind, and I have to say this because we've had a lot of top prospects come up this year. And I know I talked about this earlier. Prospects are lottery tickets. And the moment you think a prospect is more than a lottery ticket in redraft, it's going to be a problem because you're going to cut someone who shouldn't have cut to get your lottery ticket. So please, please, if nothing else, if you get nothing else from me, you know, Mr. Wet Blanket, it's that prospects are lotto tickets, right? And that doesn't mean they can't pay off. Jordan Lawler may well be a difference maker in leagues this year. Drake Baldwin has certainly a chance to be a difference maker in leagues this year. But the reason we weren't all in on Drake Baldwin right away is because he didn't have full-time playing time. In fact, he was only playing two or three times a week. And if you kept him through that whole time in a normal redraft league, you're going to need like a month of Drake Baldwin being the regular catcher to make up all that like lost production that you had from this dead spot. We actually just got a question in the chat on Nick Kurtz. And Nick Kurtz is ranked after Christian Walker, right? Nick Kurtz is not in the top 100. And Nick Kurtz did, you know, recently hit a home run. But the fact of the matter is, yes, Nick Kurtz is droppable. There are too many first basemen to sit and just hold this guy who might do it, who also is coming up with like very little minor league experience. But like, Nick Kurtz seemed like as sure of a thing as you could get. He just raked at every level in the minor leagues. But the majors is different. Doesn't matter if you're in a small park. None of those things matter. I'm like mildly interested in the fact that Kurtz has hit sixth a couple times recently. But at the end of the day, Nick Kurtz is droppable in most 10 and 12 team leagues because there's too many other first basemen that compete for him for a spot on your roster. Now, again, if you've got deep roster, you just don't need the roster spot, go ahead and keep benching him. That's fine. But if he's the only first baseman or the only corner infield guy you have on your roster, and that's why you're starting him because you don't keep a hitting bench, which is common in a lot of head-to-head leagues. Why? There's probably a first or a third baseman out there who can give you production right now. And yes, you may get that FOMO of, oh man, Kurtz, you know, think about Wyatt Langford. You kept Wyatt Langford all year. That was fine. But the fact of the matter was he hurt you for over half a season. And yes, eventually he was good enough and hopefully you were able to manage, but like outfield's deep, right? Like it was a tough call. And with Kurtz, it's not as though everything's just like, you know, it's not bad luck. He's having a hard time adapting to the major leagues. If you're going to take anything away, it's that for a second there, the strikeout rate was getting better, but then it got worse again, right? So yes, that's a long way of saying it's okay to drop Nick Kurtz. Keep him on your watch list, right? If you're a big Kurtz fan, keep him on your watch list. And the next time you need a first baseman to fill in time, go ahead and scoop him back up and see what happens. But it's okay to miss out. There are, I think the way you have to remember this is we talk a lot about guys that should be rostered, right? We say, oh, this guy needs to be on rosters. This guy should be rostered everywhere. There are more guys that should be rostered anywhere than you have spots on your roster. Okay. You need to pick and choose your battles, right? Someone out there saying Kurtz should be on every roster. And fine, you can believe that. But that doesn't mean it has to be your roster, especially if you've got other first basemen and need that spot for something else. There are more guys that should be rostered than you're going to have roster spots, and that's okay. You're going to miss out on a bunch of them. Pick and choose your battles. One of the battles that I will usually pick is the guy who continues to strike out a lot and not walk, right? In his first tour of duty in the major leagues. On a team who's making a giant defensive sacrifice to get him playing time. I don't know if Nick Kurtz will go back down to the minors. What I do know is that it's not as though there's some imminent sign that he's just going to break out. Could he? Sure. It's possible, but I don't know what you're waiting for. I don't know what you're hanging your hat on right now besides track record. And I was already not so in on that with Ozzie Albies, and he's got more of it than Nick Kurtz ever did. So I do think Nick Kurtz can and will be a very good first baseman in Major League Baseball. I think he's going to be very fantasy relevant. He may be fantasy relevant in June, for all I know. He will be eventually. I just don't think that time is now, and I don't think it's coming soon.
Well, that's a wrap for Hacks and Jacks this week. I'm Brett Ford at Fade That Man on social media. He's Scott Chu at If The Chu Fits. Scott, tell him where you can find you and your work.
Hopefully Wednesday, possibly Thursday, you'll see the next version of the hitter list come out over at pitcherlist.com. So go ahead if you want to talk to me. I respond to every comment that I can on that. On Fridays, I've got the AMA on Reddit. I try to make sure at least somebody answers every question that we get. A couple slip through the cracks, but like I'm talking like 1% because we get about 150 or so. So real good chance to get your question answered there. Otherwise, you can try to catch me, shoot me a DM, or you can at me or whatever on Twitter at If The Chu Fits, If The CHU Fits, or over on Blue Sky, scottchu.pitcherlist.com. I'm not posting a lot right now. I was a little behind and then I got pneumonia. But I'm going to try to be posting about once or twice a week. And either way, if you send me messages, I will respond to them on both sides.
Excellent. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning in. This has been Hacks and Jacks. See you later.